Bible, if you would, and open it to Romans, the 12th chapter. I want to read from that in just a second as we get into our lesson, but just take a moment to say, do appreciate your presence. It's encouraging to see all who are here, including several visiting with us, and hope that what we have to say tonight will be helpful to all. It will be a very different lesson than this morning, in which we were looking at some very important doctrinal issues. Tonight is a little more of what I would think of as, well, just a little more practical in the workings out of a congregation. I hope this morning was practical, but this is just a different type of lesson. Romans 12, verse 3 says, "For I say through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. Our ministry, let us use it in our ministering. He who teaches in teaching, he who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness." One thing I've learned through the years is when I call out the name of a member, there's usually this little, like, whoa, now what's coming next? And so I'm just going to give Coulter forewarning, you're not going to be, it's nothing that negative. Wednesday night, Coulter delivered the invitation, the exhortation, and afterwards I was talking with him, and I was surprised. I was surprised when he said, "This is the first time I've done this," because to me the quality of the lesson was beyond what I would have expected from somebody doing their first one. But I was also very encouraged. It is encouraging to me when I see people step up, step out, and take on something they've not done before. That's not always easy. And I want us to kind of think about that concept tonight about developing in public service. How do we develop our men? And I'm going to begin with some negative thoughts. And by the time I get finished with this first major point, some of you are going to say, "Well, I don't think this lesson's about developing, it's about not developing." So, you know, bear with me. But I think it is important that we understand some of these things. We're going to be talking about developing our men. But let's understand something. In fact, the majority of things we do as a Christian are not things of a public nature. If you see most of what the elders and deacons do, then the elders and deacons probably aren't really doing their job. I mean, that's just the fact of it. Sometimes if we put so much emphasis on, well, we've got to develop men in this and develop men in that, and it becomes all about these visible acts of worship, then we may not be talking enough about moral living. We may not be talking enough about the importance of Christians getting out and visiting the sick and helping restore the weak and teaching the lost and a lot of other things. I was thinking about 1 Timothy 3. I mean, when we think about our men, one of the goals is that men, you know, not all, but as many as possible, would develop to be elders. If a man desires the position of a bishop, an overseer, he desires a good work. Look at the qualifications. How many of these directly relate to leading in public worship? A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Now, the things we do publicly, or you know, collectively as a body, certainly ought to help men develop those qualities. But very few of these things directly relate to, can he lead singing? You know, how good is he at leading public prayer? Now, there's that able to teach that maybe is more public. That's not the primary thing. And I just think about the fact that some of the greatest men I've known weren't that skilled in public ways. In Matthew, the 10th chapter, in verse 42, Jesus has said that he who receives you to the apostles, verse 40, receives me. He who receives me receives him who sent me. In verse 42, he said, whoever gives one of these little ones only a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple, assuredly I say to you, he shall by no means lose his reward. We sometimes sing about just a cup of cold water. And there is great value in people who serve. They may not have these tremendous abilities. When we were in Georgia for 9 years, we lost, during the time I was there, one of the best brothers I've ever known. A brother named Hollis Collier. His son, Sterling Collier, has done a lot of preaching in Texas and Illinois. But Brother Hollis didn't do a whole lot publicly. I occasionally led a song. That was very occasionally. Occasionally he might do some other public act. Never did a lot publicly. But he and his wife were the most hospitable in the congregation. Somebody was in the hospital, you could count on them being there. If there was something around the building, he noticed there was something needed repair. He didn't call a business meeting. He just, Monday morning, he'd be up there with his tools to fix it. He just took care of things. He did so much. When he was gone, he was sorely missed. You know, so I want us to understand, this is not the end all. And any man that, they say, well, you know, I'm just not able to do these things. Well, you're still a valuable asset. And the truth is, men who are outstanding in this are not always great spiritual role models. You know, a man could be a great song leader. Does that mean he's a good husband? A good father? A man could have eloquence in the pulpit. Does that mean, going to James 3, that he knows how to use his tongue properly outside the pulpit? We're told to pray without ceasing. A man might pray beautiful public prayers. That doesn't mean he prays the way he should privately. So, we need to make sure we don't measure men by this. And the truth is, the same thing shouldn't be expected of all men. In 1 Corinthians 12, and I believe here he is speaking in that time of miraculous gifts, but even then, he didn't give everybody the same gift. The question, verse 29, are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, are all workers of miracles? Do all have gifts of healings? Do all speak with tongues? Do all interpret? And obvious answer is no. Remember what we read in Romans 12, verse 4, just a few moments ago? We have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function. I've been in congregations sometimes where there was just a tremendous pressure put on every man to do everything that could be done publicly. And it pressured men to do things they just weren't equipped to do. And sometimes what it resulted in, it was singing that was hard to sing with. Sometimes there were lessons that it was just hard to get anything out of it. Because there were men being forced to do things they just weren't really equipped to do. And we need to appreciate the fact there in 1 Corinthians 12, he develops that long analogy of the body and its many members. That because a member is not one thing doesn't mean he's not valuable. You know, look at verse 14. In fact, the body is not one member but many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body, just as he pleased. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? And he goes on with this analogy. There's no shame in saying, you know, look, I'm not an eye. But I'm a foot, I'm a toe, I'm an ear, I can do what I can do. We need to realize that and appreciate that. And then we need to make sure that as we talk about developing, that we're not developing this idea that our collective worship is some kind of performance. That we're on the stage and that we have to have this performance. And I see two problems. I see some men who are really good and they begin to think of it kind of like a performance. And you just sort of begin to see it in their manner. It has happened to a couple of preachers once, you know, upon a time, you know, that they just got to where you could just see in them. There's this, I'm performing on a stage. And I'm an entertainer. And I want people to be wowed by me. And song leaders can be that way. And sometimes you begin to think about prayers and you go, is that prayer being prayed to God or is it being prayed for the benefit of the congregation? You know, Matthew, the 6th chapter, warns us about doing things to be seen of men. Jesus said, oh, when you do that, you have your reward. But it's clear what he's talking about. But there's another aspect of it. If we become so performance-oriented in this, men who are capable, but maybe not spectacular, not perfect, they feel inadequate. The measure of true worship, John 4, 23 and 24, is it done in spirit and in truth? Singing, is it scriptural? Are the words true? Do they really reflect the word of Christ dwelling in us richly? Colossians 3, 16. Are we singing with grace in our hearts to the Lord? You know, and I think about, I will say this about myself. I quit leading singing a long time ago. Partly because 1 Corinthians 14:40 says things ought to be done decently and in order. And I decided that my song leading was not always decent. If I were in a situation where there was no one to lead the singing, I would lead. We've got men who can do that. I'm content to say I'm not that member. But what I have to think about sometimes, am I not doing that out of pride? That I fear the embarrassment to myself? And that ought not to be the case. I hope I've made that decision because that's what's best for the group. Not my own pride. We have to put that aside in this. And then there's one more negative. I had a brother one time. I won't mention his name. But we'd had several young men baptized. And he said to me, he said, you know, we got to get these young men involved or they're going to lose interest. And he meant by involved, he meant waiting on the table, leading prayers, leading singing. And I remember at the time I thought, I'm all for getting these men doing these things. But what about these young ladies that we're baptizing? If it takes waiting on the table and leading singing to keep a young man in, you know, interested, well, there's no hope for our young ladies. They'll just have to fall away. Now, that better not be what it, you know, this is not what public worship is about. It's not about, well, these are our most valuable members. I think about Ephesians 4:16, where the apostle's talking about the building up of the body. And he said, it is joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share. I want to assure you, both from scripture such as this and from experience, those who do not lead publicly can be every bit as important to the building up of the body as those who do lead publicly. There's so much. I mean, think about some of the things said in the scripture about the women. I mentioned elders. Husband of one wife. Not going to be an elder without a wife, but what did the folks at Joppa think about Dorcas? Where would we have been without Lois and Eunice? Priscilla must have been pretty special to be mentioned in four different books of the New Testament. And I know that Euodia and Syntyche, we may see them in a bad light because in Philippians 4, they'd had some kind of a problem. And Paul said, y'all need to get this figured out, get this worked out. But what did he describe them as? They were fellow workers in the gospel. No, they weren't preachers. I know that from 1 Corinthians 14 and 1 Timothy 2. But they were part of the spread of the gospel. Romans 16, he cites a number of women as being of great help to him, of great assistance. Now the women are valuable members. And I think sometimes we would do well to talk more about what can be done and not just what can't be done. Yes, in our world, we will need to continue to talk about 1 Timothy 2 and 1 Corinthians 14 and the restrictions. But we also need to talk about the opportunities. There's a lot of teaching that can be done by ladies that doesn't violate 1 Corinthians 14 or 1 Timothy 2. The encouragement, the visiting, the hospitality. You just walk out this evening, when you go out through the foyer, just keep going down the hall and look up at that bulletin board and see those ladies' names up there for preparing communion, hosting a ladies' class, teaching the ladies' class, taking meals to people. And there's a lot goes on that's not on the list. Now, I don't want us to do something that makes the ladies feel like, well, they're just lesser members. They're not. But having said all of that, there are some positives to this, after all. You know, really, I promise you, there is a good side to this. And the first was a very simple one. Somebody has to do this. You know, somebody, 1 Corinthians 14:40, I've mentioned earlier, let all things be done decently and in order. And that's in the context of the assembly of the church. When the whole church has come together in one place. And throughout this, he puts emphasis on edifying. You know, you've got to speak words people can understand. You got to pray where people can understand it. You can't have two or three people speaking at one time where things are confusing instead of being edifying. Well, if we're going to sing, somebody has to get it started. Somebody has to pick the songs. If we're going to pray together, somebody has to lead us. If we're going to study together, someone has to direct it. So we've got to have people to do this. And younger men need to be developing because older men aren't going to be around forever. Our time is, you know, it will come to an end. And we just simply need to contribute all we can. I look at Matthew 25 in that parable of the talents. And we need to understand the word talent here has to do with a big sum of money. But the talents were delivered, it says, verse 15, to each according to his own ability. And you know what happens? The man with five talents, verse 16, he goes and trades and makes five more. The one that had two, he gained two more. But he who had received one went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. And when the Lord came back, he said to him, verse 24, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. But his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sown, and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This man was given something, and he didn't use it. He didn't do what he could have with it. He had the ability, and by the way, we sometimes use the one, we say one talent man. One talent was a tremendous sum of money. You know, it was riches. It wasn't five, but it was one. It was more money than I have. And it was according to his ability. He didn't use it. Look at Romans, the 12th chapter and verse 3. For I say to you, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. Now, he may primarily speak of the man who thinks too highly of himself, but I would offer to you, thinking soberly can cut both ways. Don't undersell yourself. Don't diminish or degrade what God's given you. God's given you an ability. Well, God expects you to be able to use that. We don't exercise miraculous gifts as they did. A man given the gift of prophecy, I suppose the day he was given it, he could prophesy and prophesy well. You want to preach well, sing well, be comfortable leading the congregation in prayer? Those are skills that have to be developed. You know, but do that. Work at that. You'll get better. I mentioned earlier, I've seen congregations where by trying to force everybody to do everything, I felt like they hurt their worship. But by the same token, I've seen congregations that didn't encourage men, that maybe were so focused on just an elite few, that over time, they hurt themselves. If they didn't develop abilities, they didn't develop men. So, let's don't sell ourselves short. And there's a truth here. I made the statement earlier, and it's very true. Taking part in leading in public worship does not guarantee true spirituality. But those who do lead often, not always, but often, it does spark an increased interest on their part. Now, I don't believe in this practice of, one time had a man, we're talking about had a member that just didn't attend real well. Particularly, he was bad about not coming on Wednesday night. And the man said, and I'm being serious here, he said, I wonder if we gave him the Wednesday night adult class, I think he would come then. I was like, you got to be kidding me. 2 Timothy 2:2, the things you've heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who'll be able to teach others also. And my idea was, let's get him attending on Wednesday night. Then maybe we talk about giving him the class. I don't believe in this business of, well, let's give somebody a job and then they'll feel like, well, they have to come then. No. But somebody takes on a responsibility to teach, I'll tell you, they tend to become a better student than they've ever been before. Sometimes a young man, sometimes not so young, decides, well, I would like to develop my abilities as a song leader. And what you begin to see is he's got more interest in the singing in general. And maybe he's got his family involved because it's hard to lead singing by yourself. And suddenly he's got others involved and there's a greater interest. So I think there's a positive. And I know this. Congregations benefit from utilizing different men. And if you have one man that was the most gifted song leader, and you typically, somebody's, I mean, if you've got 10, one is going to be a little better than the other 9. But all song leaders tend to have a comfort range. They have a group of songs they go to. You have various song leaders. You get more songs. You get different things. When it comes to leading prayers, different men express different spiritual concepts. And I should say scriptural too. They're just different things. And that there's a benefit to that. I want so much to make sure my lessons are balanced, that they cover a wide variety of topics and I'm getting it all. But there's great value in from time to time other men bringing lessons. That it gives a different perspective. As hard as I try, you know, I can get a tunnel vision. And others bring something different. Sometimes there are lessons that are just better delivered by somebody else. When I was at one congregation, one day a brother came to me. He said, I'm going to preach on such and such date. He was the kind of man that doesn't ask you. He just kind of told me, but he did it in a good way. He had some things he thought the congregation really needed to hear. And he said, it'd just be better if it came from me. And whew, he wore them out that day. And it was good. It was proper. And it just helps us avoid the whole clergy concept. Matthew 23, you know, this business of exalting one above another, I just believe as many men as we can get involved, the better it is in this. So, my negatives aren't all there. Well, how do we do this now? This is what I want to say real quickly. 1 Peter 1:22 may be a key in all of this. 1 Peter 1:22, since you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit and sincere love of the brethren, love one another fervently with a pure heart. If we're going to develop our men, and they're going to encourage, particularly young men, beginners, to step up, to step out into areas that sometimes they may not be entirely comfortable in, we're going to have to be a congregation of love. Because we're going to have to be patient and encouraging with people. That love that is long-suffering and kind and gentle. When a young man, not always, it doesn't have to be young. You know, you could be 50 and decide to take on a new job. You're going to be nervous. I always tell young people, I always say young, because that's usually who it is. I hope you're nervous when you get up to give a talk. I hope you're nervous when you get up to speak before the Lord's table. If you're not nervous, then you don't understand the importance of what you're doing. This is serious business. And so there ought to be a certain nervousness about you. I'll never forget, I was trying to preach a few lessons. I wasn't preaching regularly, but I was starting to preach some and really interested in it. And Bill Hall was talking to him. Bill was probably about 40 at the time. And I was asking him about nerves. He said, oh, I still get nervous. But, you know, you're about the best preacher I know. You've been doing this for 25 years and you still get nervous. And I understood what he was saying. to him what he was doing is so important. You know, so I'm saying people are going to be nervous because Hebrews 12, 29 and 28, we're wanting to do this with godly fear and reverence. But in that nervousness, every now and then mistakes will be made. We need to be encouraging. If somebody, people just, they've got to know that everybody's rooting for them. Parents, they're more nervous than their children the first time they get up. And I mean, they're just rooting for them. Well, what our people need is to feel like every single member here is just rooting for them. Everybody wants them. One of the things I've observed a few times through the years is if you have a situation where, especially trying to develop young men to preach, if you announce ahead of time that, you know, one of our men's going to preach, that'll be the night that some people decide to go visit elsewhere. Look, I don't want you visiting elsewhere anytime. I always want you here. But for sure, that's not the night to do that. That's a night you need to be here so that you can encourage and thank them and let them know how much you appreciate what they're doing. And when they make a mistake, look, he said 1 Timothy when it was supposed to be 2 Timothy. That's probably not the first thing you say to him. Is, did you know you said 2 Timothy 3 and it was supposed to have been 1 Timothy 3? In fact, you might just let that one go. He'd probably figure it out. If it's something that needs to be corrected, correct it in a good spirit. Maybe you've seen this. Young man got up to lead prayer and he talked so softly. Kind of mumbled and you couldn't hear him. Well, instead of saying, "Feller, you're going to have to speak up or we'll never hear you," maybe, you know, a better way might be to say, "I appreciate your prayer, but next time, if you'd get just a little closer to that microphone, you know, we'd be able to hear those good thoughts even better." That might be just a little more effective in that. Maybe we need to teach people sometimes. You know, it's something we ought to think about. I'm having a class on this. I would be glad to help anybody, not song leading, of course. You seek somebody else out on that. But I would be glad to be a helper to anybody in this. And I just want to encourage us as a group. Let's encourage our men. Help them. Sometimes they may not think they have the talents. But with enough love and encouragement, they'll find some abilities there that they didn't know were there. They will find the time to develop those abilities because they've got people supporting them. What you'll get the first time out of most people is not what you will get given some time to improve. Be patient with folks. But finally, brethren, I just want to say to all of you men, it's up to you. There can be training, there can be encouragement. I think this congregation will support you. And they'll love you. And if you make if you made a horrendous mistake, they'll just pick you back up and help you get going again. But it's up to you. You're going to have to be the one to commit yourself to developing yourself and your talents. We'll help, but you've got to do it. Well, as I said, this lesson's a little different, but I hope it's been helpful to us. Make us think about some things. I think these things are important. It is important that we develop these kinds of skills. It's important that whatever we do with all our ability. What he said in Colossians to the servants. Colossians 3, in verse 23, whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. That has to be our philosophy. Do the best we can. Develop the best we can. But let's understand, we can become the best. If you could preach with such fervor and such eloquence that no one, you know, people just are amazed. If you can lead singing, you know, better than R.J. Stevens ever did. If you can, you know, whatever it might be. No. You're a servant, helping other servants.